Hello, and welcome to Public Key, the podcast from Chainalysis. This is your host, Ian Andrews. Is anyone else tired of reading headlines about the latest crypto hack? Nearly $2 billion were stolen in the first half of 2022 alone. Some of the biggest thefts are from cross-chain bridges, but so many losses are from individual wallets being compromised by a phishing attack or smart contract manipulation. I felt like there had to be some smart people working on solutions to this problem. So this week I'm joined by Omer Sadika, founder and CEO of DWallet Labs. Omer comes to crypto from the world of cybersecurity, and he's got a fascinating take on what access control means in a decentralized world. His team's building a new layer one blockchain called Odyssey that enables programmable and cross-chain wallets. We get into some of the technical details of what DWallet is building and also discuss implications for DAOs and gaming platforms. After the episode, check out the show notes for a blog from my colleague and public key guest, Aaron Plant, about chasing funds stolen by North Korean leaked hackers and the amazing recovery of $30 million worth of cryptocurrency by law enforcement. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Omer Sadiki, who is co-founder and CEO of DWallet Labs. Omer, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to meet you, Ian.
You look like you're in a hotel room. Where in the world are you joining us from today?
Today, I am in Lisbon, Portugal.
Beautiful city from the pictures I've seen. I've never had the opportunity to visit, but it's definitely on my list. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to talk about what you and the DWallet team are up to. You've been in the news recently. You're doing some really exciting things in crypto. But on this show, we love to start with people's background because I'm so fascinated by how we've all arrived in this world of cryptocurrency. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you get your start? How did you end up co-founding a company in the world of cryptocurrency?
So first of all, I started coding when I was very young, about 11 years old. I'm coming up from Israel, and my background is the intelligence core in cybersecurity. So really what I've done in many years is cybersecurity. And also I founded a startup in security called Assault Security, an API security company. And I came up with this new concept of API security, which today is a pretty big category. But my connection, my really connection to crypto is since Bitcoin started. I was really fascinated about this new concept. So I'm coming from cybersecurity, and I think crypto is really connected. I see crypto as a subset, a subgroup of cybersecurity. It's part of it. I'm talking about the technical side, about cryptography and the software. I was really fascinated about this new concept that you can have a system that you don't have to rely about one entity or small number of entities that is decentralized. So really back then, and then, you know, as crypto evolved with the Ethereum, I always was part of it in many ways, in some ways. And to me, it's the future. And always I wanted to build something big in crypto.
I love that story. It's actually very similar to mine. Early in my career, I worked on a very large public key infrastructure deployment. This was about 20 years ago, and you know, it was email signing, website authentication via digital certificates on smart cards. When I first got into the world of cryptocurrency and started looking around and kind of learning how everything worked, I was like, oh, okay. You know, a wallet is really just a key store for your private key. Like, okay, now I kind of understand what's going on here. And all this, like, transactions are really just sort of, you know, signing messages, transaction hashes, appending to this long, immutable public ledger. Like, a lot of that early cryptography technology that I had experienced, you know, 20 years ago carried through into what the kind of core underlying pieces of the today's modern cryptocurrency infrastructure. The other thing that you said there about Ethereum really catching your eye, that was also my experience, right? This idea of not just, here's a thing that has some value, we can exchange it to support maybe payments, or we'll hold on to it and it'll appreciate over time. But the programmability of Ethereum was what really struck me. I think you had a similar experience, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the way that I see it is exactly like you said. We started with Bitcoin that showed us that we can transfer value, transfer money, currency in a decentralized manner without relying on centralized entities. But I think it was just the beginning. It was just kind of proof of concept. It's not that I'm saying that Bitcoin is proof of concept, but just to show us what is really the power of crypto. And then we come to Ethereum with this new concept of dApps, decentralized app, like you said. So it's not just about transferring money. It's not just about transferring funds. It's about any kind of logic that you want to build, any type of software that you want to build. And I think also what we have today in Ethereum is the beginning. I believe that the future of crypto is more than that. It will be more connected to the way that we see cloud providers today, like AWS, for example, or Google Cloud. So we will see those type of infrastructures on crypto. So full apps, including everything. So really, this is the way that I see it.
It's amazing. And so maybe bringing us around to why you created DWallet, I find fascinating these two ideas. This is one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show, is you've clearly picked up on there's a big gap in how wallets work today. Like the safety, the security, all those things seem very broken to me in the wallet landscape. And I see this happen, you know, every day in my Twitter timeline. There's somebody who's gotten phished or hacked or authorized a contract they didn't mean to, or forgot to deauthorize a contract. They no longer wanted to have access to their funds. It just clearly doesn't work as well as it needs to bring, you know, the next 100 million people into crypto. And then at the same time, you're creating a new layer one blockchain, which in this day and age seems a little bit crazy to me. And so I'm fascinated to talk about why the new layer one blockchain and how all this fits together. So maybe give us a little background on what inspired you to start the company and what you're trying to build.
It's a really, really good question, what you just said. The way that I looked on crypto, and again, it's from my perspective as a cybersecurity expert, is that, you know, crypto evolve and we have so many use cases and it's really getting connected to the real world more and more. But when it comes to access control, which is something that is super fundamental for every individual in today's world, people don't even think about, you know, having access control to my bank account or even access control to my note-taking apps or Telegram or Discord. You just have it and you know that you have it there. But when it comes to crypto, it's really, really broken. You have to choose between two different options. One option is to use the access control that you get from the blockchains, which is decentralized because you directly use the blockchains. And that's using your private key with wallet like MetaMask. But basically what it means is that you hold the keys. And then with this key, you can authenticate to the blockchain. You can send transaction and prove that it's you. But that's the only thing that you can do. Right? If I want to give you access to my wallet, the only way that I have to do that is to give you my private keys, to give you my full access to that wallet, and I can't revoke it. I can't give you partial access or limited access. I can do all of those stuff. So because of that, the way that this gap was filled by now is using centralized solutions. So instead of me giving you access to my private key, I'll give you access through some centralized entity, centralized solution that will hold the assets for me or will do stuff to me. And I think recently we've seen also a lot of problems when other entities hold the assets for you. What can happen because of that? So we have many examples of those. But also in terms of when you have this private key with full access, like you said, it's really, really easy to cheat you, right? To make you do stuff that you didn't think about. So it's really all connected to access control in many ways. And really the idea was to come with a concept that will solve that. And that's the concept of DWallet. So first of all, DWallet is a new concept, is a new primitive. I see it as like the apps, that it's a new primitive in crypto. And of course, I know that the company name is DWallet Labs. It's because it's really connected to DWallets. But DWallet is a primitive. The way that you can think about it is that we are building the Odyssey Network, which is the name of the blockchain and also the name of the project. We're four co-founders. By the way, we also have the Odyssey Foundation. We'll be in charge of making sure that the ecosystem and the development of the network for the future. But really, in terms of this concept of DWallet, we see it as the next phase in crypto. So we had this first phase of Bitcoin with payments. Then we went to Bitcoin with this new concept of the apps that you can build decentralized apps. And we think that the new problem that we are facing in crypto is access control, and we came with Odyssey, which is the blockchain and the token, and we're going to solve that with this new primitive called DWallets.
I think this idea of DWallets is really interesting, right? Like the programmability at the wallet layer. Decentralized is probably one term. It strikes me you could almost call it a smart wallet in the same way that we think about a smart contract on Ethereum. Tell us more about what that is and kind of like how it's actually going to work in practice.
So first of all, D-wallet means a dynamic decentralized wallet. So it's about the D, right? It's like we wanted to keep like the app to make it simple. And it's exactly like you said, it's first of all dynamic, but it's also decentralized. And I think that's really important. This is what you don't have today in crypto. This is what you don't get from the existing blockchains. And the whole idea of those D-wallets is that they are first of all transferable, but also programmable. It means that you can write whatever logic you want Turing complete. You can also transfer them like assets on the blockchain, like you transfer tokens or NFTs, the same way it feels for you as a user. And it's the first time that you'll be able to do those stuff, right? Because today you can't. You can't sell your wallet, for example, because you still have a copy of the private key. No one will trust you, right? And you can't give access. You can't program your wallet. You have no way to do that. So the idea is that this new primitive lives on the blockchain, it lives on Odyssey network. It's not technically correct to say that it lives, but it's not exactly like that. The way that we're implementing that, we have a lot about it on the in the light paper on our website, odyssey.xyz. We have a lot about it there. We're going to implement that, but just to make it simplified for the user to understand. So it's a new primitive on the blockchain. You can create it, you can transfer that, and you can bind it wallet contracts. So what is a wallet contract? It's a dedicated type of smart contracts for the wallets. So it lets you to write the logic for the D-wallet, basically.
So the Odyssey network, the new blockchain you're creating, is not a general purpose blockchain. Like you don't expect that people will be using that as a primary transaction platform. It really exists to operate the D-wallet primitive. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yes. In some ways, the way that we design the blockchain is, of course, to be L1 blockchain because we are going to control the consensus. And that's also, we need to do that because of the way that we design the network. We have to do it. We can't just use existing blockchain and build it on top of that in the way that we wanted it, because it was super important for us to make sure that it's a security first blockchain. This is about that. But really, I think in terms of the network itself, the goal is that you won't just go there and build the same project like you build on Ethereum or Solana or Cardano or Algorand. That's really not the goal here. You can do that because wallet contracts are Turing complete. It means that you can build whatever logic that you want, but that's not the purpose of this new blockchain. We're not trying to compete with other L1 blockchains. Actually, exactly the opposite. We want to partner with them. We want to work with them because we want to become the access control layer for Web3. Also, the way that we see it is not as layer one, but as access control layer.
Oh, interesting. And maybe just some of the technical details for our listeners who are interested, like, is it an EVM compatible chain? Like, if I'm familiar with developing in Solidity for Ethereum or one of the related chains, can I jump on Odyssey and kind of use my same development infrastructure and skills I've already developed, or am I learning something entirely new?
So right now, this is exactly what we're going through. We're building the testnet, and the goal is within 6 months to launch it. This is the goal. This is not a promise, just to say.
we're marking it down. 4 to 6 months, everybody. Omer's going to have Odyssey testnet live. You heard it here first. No, absolutely. The early beta stages, because you all really just came out of stealth. But testnet's being developed right now. Yeah. Once that's live, then developers can come and try this out. It'll be open network, I assume.
Yes. So we're checking a variety of options. Of course, we want the users not to start and build and learn a new programming language and a new frameworks and infrastructures. Right now, the goal is probably to leverage Rust and existing smart contract solutions. So just to have the community use stuff that they're already familiar with. The reason why we don't want to go with Solidity, although we know that there is a huge community around it, it's because of the security aspects. I think that it's harder to build a very secure protocol with Solidity. It's getting better and better all the time. But Rust, for example, is a better choice when the focus is really about cybersecurity.
I'm with you there. I look at a lot of these Solidity-based smart contracts, and it's kind of scary the way you can get yourself into trouble quickly. Like, the language is just not great for the criticality of some of the things that are being done with it. It would be my simple perspective. So that's fun. Everybody gets to come on the new network, building in Rust. If I've already built something on Ethereum, is that portable? Like, are you going for some compatibility there? Or is the blockchain and the interfaces that I'm programming to going to be quite a bit different?
In terms of the signing transactions for Ethereum, it will be it will work, right? Because that's the mechanism. But in terms of building on top of Odyssey, probably not. Because also our focus is building the new use cases, and I'll talk more about the use cases that we see. Because of that, anyway, I think that we need devs to build new projects, new protocols, that their design will be different, right? So for example, DeFi on Odyssey using the wallets will be natively interoperable between different blockchains. You don't need to use bridges, for example, or to build all of this infrastructure.
Now, this is an interesting point. So for anyone that's been paying attention over the last, 6 to 12 months, all of the biggest thefts in crypto have happened related to a bridge attack. Either the bridge getting drained because of a compromise of the validation layer, or a compromise of the contract layer, or a phishing of the key shares that operate control of the bridge. We're talking, I think, well north of $1 billion has been stolen in that time period from bridges. So the point you just made about eliminating the need for bridges to operate across chains is fascinating to me, because I think this is one of the biggest problems in crypto today when we think about security, is that the bridge technology just hasn't been particularly mature or secure to this point. Talk us through how this is going to work and what DWallet does to solve the challenge of the kind of multi-chain ecosystem that we operate in today.
First of all, I would say that the reason why you have all of those issues with bridges and, other related stuff that really connected to the infrastructure is because a lot of it is based on cybersecurity. And the problem that I think is that people come into crypto without the expertise and the knowledge in cybersecurity, and they make a lot of mistakes. And it makes sense, right? If it's not your expertise, it's hard for you to understand what you have done wrong, right? It's really, really hard. So the way that we see it is that you can think about Odyssey Network with DWallets as an infrastructure that cybersecurity experts were built for you, and you don't have to care about it. You don't have to handle all the security aspects. Of course, at the end of the day, you have to think about security aspects in the wallet contract that you are writing, but you don't care about the infrastructure. You don't have to worry about the accounts and the private keys and where you store them and how you do that. And if you have nodes, how they communicate and how they share those private keys. And this is exactly where you create those vulnerabilities. This is exactly where you create those weaknesses. And for us, it will be easy as building a smart contract on Ethereum to build a protocol on top of Odyssey using the wallets. So if you want to build any of those protocols that today required you to have the full infrastructure around them, with Odyssey you won't have that anymore. You can just focus on what you want to accomplish and build it using the wallets together with wallet contracts.
This is really interesting. I imagine there's a couple people listening who are familiar with like the MPC wallet concept. And I think you're kind of extending MPC, which has been a huge development in the cryptocurrency ecosystem over the last few years. Like, quite a few companies have commercialized an MPC wallet technology, and it's kind of the back end for the popular way to do custody right now. Talk a little bit about how what you're building relates to MPC.
MPC means multi-party computation, which means that you can do computation between different parties without any of them revealing secret information, the information that they want to share with others. An example, just simple example for the audience to understand. Let's say that we are five people and we want to calculate the average salary of all of us without any of us telling what is our salary. So this is something that you can do with MPC. This is an example. But of course, you can do much, much more complex things like signing transactions without having a private key. Just split a secret shares between different parties and together they sign transactions. There is no private key, but you can think about it like the private key that was supposed to be there won't be compromised. So this is about MPC, and today I think we mostly see it with the institutions. We have some retail projects as well, but mostly there. And the reason is because of it's very complex and very hard. It's the edge, the top edge of cryptography today. And only in the last few years, we have been seeing real protocols that you can use in the real world. I think there are a very, very small number of teams all over the world that can build MPC projects. So you have to have a deep understanding in cryptography and cybersecurity in order to do it properly. The way that we did it is to take the, I'll call it traditional MPC, which it's like, you know, 5-6 years old. So it's of course not traditional, but we took it. And what we're doing is to create an MPC that is designed for blockchain, which is a bit different than the MPC that we have so far, which is mostly between parties when you try to build custody solutions, if it's for institutions or for retails or exchanges that want it for their backend and so on. So we're doing it a bit different, and we're taking the existing protocol and modifying them to support the way that we're building it. So we're not starting from scratch, but we're building something new that doesn't exist yet in this MPC space.
I'm fascinated to see this develop. Maybe shifting a little bit, what do you anticipate people are actually going to be able to use this for? Like, I think the technology we could talk about all day, but there's probably some specific practical applications that you're aiming for, expect people to bring onto the platform. Where do you see this going?
First of all, we have the obvious use cases, like, you know, custody for retail institutions. There are the use cases that I am really excited about. And I think also my partners, my teams, we're all thinking about those use cases all the time. And I have to say that the way that we see it is that we will see the top use cases coming from the community, like with Ethereum, that we saw the top use cases of dApps coming from the community, like Uniswap, right? So we have a lot of that. But what is really exciting me are use cases that we couldn't imagine before this new concept of dWallets, like a marketplace for dWallets that you can transfer, you can sell, or an exchange that you can really trade them like any other asset. So this is one example. Another example is DAO. So think about a native multi-chain DAO that you don't have to use wrapped assets. Today, most of the existing DAOs, the way that they operate is to have their smart contract, their dApp lives in some existing blockchain like Ethereum. And then whatever they want to hold, they do that usually through wrapped assets if it's not a token that lives in Ethereum. And this is what we want to change. So with dWallets, you don't have to do that anymore. You are going to have an address on the other blockchains, and you can hold the assets directly. You can do transaction. You can vote on approving a transaction as part of the DAO, right? So it's a new concept. It's a different way to think about it. And also, I think it's really connected crypto to the real world, because just think about the structure of companies, for example. When you think about it, when you have a DAO that can hold assets on different blockchain, it's much more connected to the real world.
This DAO idea really starts to make sense to me. Today, most DAOs are operating with something like Gnosis Safe as the backend where they're storing assets. And then they have, you know, some mechanism for organizing themselves and doing some sort of a vote. I think in certain DAOs, certain communities, it's very loose. It may be a confederation of friends or casual acquaintances. Others have much more governance structure. The organization of the shared funds and the ability for those funds to be used is not necessarily well connected to what's actually happening on chain. Like, there's still a lot of in real life coordination, I think, that happens in a lot of these. And so the programmability that you're thinking about bringing to the wallet seems like it allows you to implement better control and governance over the assets that are held by the DAO. Am I thinking about that right?
You're totally correct. And again, that's, again, I think the game changer. You know, usually I think most DAOs, what they do is to invest some funds, but to have a DAO that can operate similar to real organization in the real world, with organizational structure that you can grant access to certain players with this DAO, and you can have a real structure similar to what you have with the organizations and with maybe sub DAOs. It's something that we're also thinking about that can live in different blockchains. So just imagine that. Imagine that you can hold a DAO partially on Solana and it become like a subsidiary in some ways, right? And you can give somebody access to do stuff with this subsidiary. it's a different way to really think about all the structure, and I think it's really connecting us to this premise of crypto, to have not just the assets, not just the token itself, but also the organizations to live on the blockchain.
Now, you also mentioned DeFi. I think you brought up Uniswap as an example there. How does this end up relating to or complementing what's happening in the DeFi ecosystem across DEXs or swap platforms and some of the lending liquidity pools? Like, where does this fit into that architecture that people are familiar with today?
I think, first of all, it's creating a new concept. So it's not just DEX, it's also for exchanges in general, also centralized exchanges. So think about being able to hold the wallets through your centralized exchange, through the exchange itself, and then you'll be able to move your wallet to live in centralized environment and then in decentralized environment. But when you have access to the D wallet through your exchange or through your, let's say, Coinbase or Binance, think about that you'll be able to do transaction to that D wallet. So you can not just hold the assets with Coinbase, you'll be able also to tell Coinbase, I want to stake my tokens. And it's your wallet, you hold them directly. And it's something that you can do because they hold it for you. So it's also for existing exchanges and centralized solutions. But when it comes to DEX, I think also this interoperable that is native to the blockchain, right? You don't have to build the interoperability. You just have to decide whatever you want to do. So it gives you the ability to create those DeFi projects on top of Odyssey that will be natively multi-chain. So you can have liquidity pool on Ethereum and another liquidity pool on Solana and connect them through Odyssey.
That is super interesting. Now, we did see Coinbase brought out a new wallet that is a variant of MPC, right? And I think their goal was really on improving the user experience, right? Contrasted to like a traditional self-custody wallet, you lose the private key, the funds are gone. I think the Coinbase solution was attempting to solve that particular pain point. So they have recoverability as a customer service feature because of the implementation of MPC they've used. But I think you're taking it a step further in what you just described from how a centralized exchange could work with the user, like give them benefit, but also you still have complete control over your funds and the ability to move them and take them wherever you choose to do, right?
Awesome. Build complex structures, you know, I can't really decide what the market will do, what the community will do. But just imagine that to run transaction, you have to prove it on Coinbase and Binance, right? For the same new wallets, because we have a shared access through them. So those just thoughts, but it's just impossible today. And with new wallets, you'll be able to do that with this new primitive.
It strikes me that there's a huge opportunity for builders to take advantage of this technology. And you mentioned earlier that you've actually created a foundation structure to support adoption of the blockchain. Our friend in common, Sean Lee, I think is running the foundation for you. Sean used to run Algorand's foundation. Tell us about what the foundation will be doing. Is there, you know, plans to bring developers into the ecosystem? Like, what should we expect there?
Yeah, so that's correct. So Odyssey, by the way, the way that we spell Odyssey is O-D-S-Y, not the correct way.
We'll link to both your website and the light paper and the foundation. We'll put all those in the show notes so everybody can find their way to more details.
So really, our goal is to make sure that we're doing it properly. We have the Odyssey Foundation based in Swiss Zug, non-profit. Same structure as the big foundation like Solana, Cardano, Ethereum. We, by the way, use the same law firm to make sure that we're doing it right. And the goal is to support the ecosystem. So like you said, and we have Sean. Sean is my co-founder. So we are four co-founders. Sean is one of them. And before that, he was the CEO of Algorand Foundation. So he really knows how to do that properly. This is the goal. So to do grants, to invest in this ecosystem. And this is what we want to do. Our goal is not to build those protocols or products, but is to create this infrastructure that everybody can come and build. So we want to attract builders, we want to attract the community to build on top of us. And of course, we have the company, and the company is the tech side, the tech arm of the project, right? It's a separate entity, it's not connected, but still the company will be the one that is really working on the tech side and the cryptography. So we have the top cryptographers in Israel and top cybersecurity experts. So we really brought the top talents that we can bring from cryptography, cybersecurity, and engineering to build all of that. And the foundation is going to launch the token and also hold the treasury. So everything will go through the foundation.
Exciting. I would be remiss to not ask when token. What's the token launch date for all the people that are going to go eagerly scoop up a new token?
Of course, it will be when we launch the mainnet. And that's the plan to do that after the testnet. We don't have a decision to when exactly. We want first to get to the testnet, and then we'll see how we feel comfortable with going to the next step and launching the mainnet. But hopefully we'll do that sooner after we launch the testnet. That's the goal.
Exciting. Well, it's going to be a fun next 4 to 6 months waiting for the testnet to get live and then the March to mainnet launch. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on it post-launch. Love to have you back on the show and talk about all the exciting things that developers are building in the ecosystem. Omer, it was a fun chat today. Thanks for joining us on Public Key. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Ian. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Public Key. We're releasing new episodes weekly. So if you liked what you heard, then do me a favor, subscribe, review, and of course, share with your friends. If you're like me, you probably spend a lot of time reading about crypto. And lately, my newsfeed has been filled with articles about Tornado Cash. This decentralized mixing service was recently sanctioned by the US Treasury Office of Foreign Asset Control. If you want to understand what Tornado Cash is and the implications that those sanctions could have on the broader crypto industry, be sure to read all about it in our comprehensive blog. You can find the link in the show notes.